What is going on, everyone? It's episode 202, recorded on Sunday, April 21st, 2024. I'm John, and I've got a dirty joke for you. James was so poor, all he could afford as a gift for his friend was a pile of dirt. His friend was understanding, though, and just said, "Thanks. I appreciate the sediment." "What? I said I had a dirty joke." All right, we are here to go over my top 200 list. Now, I talked a little bit about my top 200 that I did to celebrate our 200th episode on Dads After Dark, which is amazing if you think about it, like truly, truly crazy. I put this list up on the Discord, I posted it on Threads, but I've decided before I archive this channel, before it just goes away as we move on now into our 200s, let me just do a quick little episode and just go through the list and talk about it. Now, again, as I've said, this was a huge challenge to make. Making a top 10 list is hard, right? To pick your top 10 favorite games of all time. There's so many great games that you love that you just have to let go. Making a top 200 doesn't have that problem per se, but ordering 200 games to try to figure out, you know, between Super Meat Boy and Inside, which one you like more is really hard because at any given moment, you know, you want to play that game or the other, right? So it's hard to pick, like, what was a game that I love that I don't need to play again versus a game that I really loved but I want to play again, but is that game better? It's really hard. And when I put this list together, I literally just went through my collection and listed out every game that I had played through, digital, physical, didn't matter. And then I started to like break them up into chunks. I took the games that I knew would be at the top of the list, I put them in one group. I put the games that I was like, I really don't like that much, put them in another group. And then eventually I had to sort all the groups, and then I just went through it over and over and over again, iterating through, reading it through, seeing if there's anything glaring going on. Is this list going to be perfect? No. Heck, I can look at this list now and see several games where I'm like, I would have moved that up or I would have moved that down. So the list is not perfect. It's a very hard list to do, but I am pretty satisfied with how it came out. So let's go through it. Now, another thing about how games get rated, it's very easy to pick all the Nintendo exclusive games, the Nintendo published games, throw them right at the top. I tried to just use the fact that the game is on Switch as the only qualification. It can be some third-party port from 8 years ago, but it's on Switch, so it's there. It's based on my own experiences, but if a game is only on Switch, it doesn't necessarily propel it to the top. You know, this isn't a list of like top 20, top 200 Nintendo exclusives, right? So anything matters. With that, let's go through how I ranked them. We will start, we'll do this in chunks. We'll start from the bottom. And do I want to read upwards? All right, we'll read upwards. We'll just go in a direct order. And Mr. Irrelevant, game number 200 on this list is Duck Game. 199 is Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, 198 Valiant Hearts Coming Home, 197 Tumbleseed, 196 The Stretchers, Bastion, Hotline Miami Collection, Night Trap, The Messenger, Steam World Quest, Katana Zero at 190. Duck Game probably could be a little bit higher. I have enjoyed that game. These other games I did enjoy as well. The Stretchers is very underrated. It's a really fun two-player co-op game to go through. I think you can play it solo as well. I think I spent a lot of time playing it solo. The Messenger is low for me just because of the way that game changes midway through. I have never liked it, and I've played through the game 1.5 times. The second time, I really enjoyed playing through that first half again. And then I got to the second half, and I was just immediately reminded of why I didn't like the second half of that game. Steam World Quest really could be higher. It's just not a good deck builder. I think once you're teasing deck mechanics in a game and then, you know, you're just getting the same cards over and over again, that really hurts it. This is the same thing that happened to Marvel's Midnight Suns for me recently on PlayStation, honestly, is that it just doesn't feel like a deck builder. All right, let's go back to, by the way, Night Trap is underrated. 193, it actually got ahead of some games. I actually had a little bit of fun with Night Trap if you haven't played that game. That's an old one, but it had some fun. All right, 189, F-Zero, 99. 188, Diablo 2. 187, Super Blood Hockey. 186, the Lara Croft Collection. I only played half of that. Then Crypt of the Necrodancer, West of Dead, Comp 2, Brothers, Tetris Effect Connected, and Mario & Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Now I can already hear it. How is Mario & Rabbids Sparks of Hope number 2? I assure you, I love the first game a lot more. This is a game I've been playing the DLC for lately. I just got the DLC a couple months ago. I played through the first DLC, didn't love it. I don't know what it is, but I feel like this game took a lot of the strategy out of the game. It mostly became just attack, attack, attack. Whereas the first game, you had to do some very specific sequences in order to get past levels. They really fine-tuned the design of it to the point where you had to really figure out how to get through it. And I don't feel like that's in Sparks of Hope at all. What else? I mentioned Lara Croft Collection. I played the first game. I enjoyed the beginning of it, and then it got a little repetitive or so, but I still liked it. All of these games are games that I like, by the way. Crypt of the Necrodancer is still, to this day, the game that I could never beat that I really did kind of enjoy, but that game is so hard to try to get through a full run of Crypt of the Necrodancer. I can't even get close. And I've gotten through all the levels individually, and I've unlocked everything in the game. Cannot for the life of me. And I tried redoing it again 6 months ago or so. I was like, let me try it again. I'm better at roguelikes now. Let me do it again. I stink at it. Like, it's so hard. I definitely like Cadence of Hyrule better. Tetris Effect Connected deserves better than 181 on this list, honestly. I have enjoyed it, although a lot of people really, like, loved it and it was like crazy, and I think in VR it's a better experience. It is a very cool, cozy experience. You're just playing some Tetris, but it's also just kind of playing 40 levels of Tetris at a time. And I've gone through the whole game. I've tried the multiplayer stuff, which is really fun as well. But I don't know. I it just ended up kind of lower on this list. There's just a lot of good games here. So, but I really love that game. All right, 179, Resident Evil Revelations Collection. I've only played the first game of that. 178, Sea of Stars. 177, Super Meat Boy Forever. 176, Ollie Ollie World. Then Rhyme, Telling Lies, Octodad, Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, Return of the Obra Dinn, and I Am Setsuna at 170. I Am Setsuna is kind of special to me because that was the first game I ever played on the Switch when I came home from the midnight launch. That was the first game I played. And so that's always going to be special to me. The snow, the sereneness of it while I'm playing on this super high resolution device. I was very excited about. So that one kind of probably gets up a little bit higher than it should just because of that. Return of the Obra Dinn is a game that I think could go much higher in this list someday, and I really want to love it, and I've tried it. But you have to solve all these crimes, and I think that's really fun. But this is not a game where you can just sit down and relax and play. It is a game where you need some paper, and you need to really think it through. And I just have not been able to go back to that. I tried to keep everything juggled in my head, and I couldn't. But it's like when I play games, I don't want to sit there and write things down or whatever. But I really advise writing things down if you play that game. They have paperwork in the game, but that can be a little bit crazy. Sea of Stars is 170 on this list. It's just a game that didn't connect with me. Gorgeous music, gorgeous graphics, pretty good gameplay. The story just fell apart for me and just got weird. And that's why it kind of ends up at 178. And even though Super Meat Boy Forever didn't live up to Super Meat Boy, still a game that I had fun with, kind of an auto runner, and probably a game I'll get back to someday as well. All right, starting 169, Griftlands. 168, Nobody Saves the World. 167, Don't Starve. 166, Just Dance. All of them in general. And then Limbo, Inside, South Park, Stick of Truth, Enter the Gungeon, Baba Is You, and at number 160 is Nidhogg 2. This is an interesting section. Inside and Limbo are almost conveniently in the same place. Inside is a better game than Limbo, but I enjoy both of them. But they're both sort of short experiences that when you're done, you're kind of like, you just move on. Not a game you live in, not a game that lasts long. Hey, that's cool. I get kind of sick of them on eShop all the time on sale. It's like, can we just move on? Griftlands is probably a game that should sink a little bit more. In my head, when I made this list, Griftlands was a game that I had beaten a few runs in, and I liked that it was a roguelike that had a story. And it didn't feel like a roguelike. It was a roguelike that if you died, you were done. But there was like a story, and there was so much decision-making. The people that you're going to be friendly with, the people you're going to help out, the people that you're going to deceive. But in playing it, after a run, you start to really not care if you're going to deceive this person or not. Like, because I don't feel like the outcome is just going to be this person won't give me a deal on something. I don't feel like there's a relationship break there. So after a run, you're kind of like, whatever. Okay, I'll deceive you. I need some money right now. You're not making decisions based on what's the smartest thing to do, just more about immediate. But since I made this list, I tried to replay the game, and I was like, I'm going to give it another go. And I honestly liked it even less. So honestly, I think Griftlands would probably sink in this list if I redid this one. Baba Is You is an amazing puzzle game, by the way, but it will tax your brain. Again, not a cozy game. I would fall asleep playing this game because I was breaking my brain so hard over it. So I haven't gone back to it. But I did beat it. I still have some levels to do, but I just don't know if I'll ever get back to it. It's not relaxing. All right. Number 159, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. That's right. 158, Thumper. 157, Wild Frost. 156, New Super Mario Bros. Deluxe. And then we have Inmost, Mario vs. Donkey Kong, Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, Super Mega Baseball 2, Hyrule Warriors, and then at number 150, Gordian Quest. Prince of Persia is low on my list. This game did not meet my expectations, my own hype for it. It does a lot of good things, definitely does a lot of good things. The story just falls flat on its face. The combat is very one-dimensional. I lost a lot of interest in it. And the boss fights are just kind of feel unfair. It kind of has that Hollow Knight vibe where you're just a little character and these bosses are just flying all over the place. It does a lot of things well. The platforming is really good in this game. I think the world is too big and the stages are just too big. Like, it just everything's just too big in this game. What can you do, right? New Super Mario Bros. Deluxe is a game that's pretty low on this list for a Nintendo published game, but I'm just kind of tired of it. So I just, you know, not really something that's high up on this list. Mario vs. Donkey Kong, I had a little bit more fun with this one. I had rolled the initial credits in the game when I did this list. But since then, I actually did all the post-credits levels, and they're actually a lot of fun. I had thought that they would be a lot of the same, but they're actually pretty interesting and fun. So this game would probably go up on this list. Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection was a game I played through. I thought I would play through it more than I did. It is a game I want to get back to and try to do more runs in it, but it's kind of like a game where it's not just like a one-time game. Like, there's reasons to play it again. I want to get back to it. I want to give that game another shot and see. But I did roll credits and I did enjoy it, so it was enough to be at 153. And then Gordian Quest is a game I do want to get back to. I think the campaign on that game is way too stretched out. I don't think a game should be like 30, 40 hours of this type. But I'm going to give it another shot. All right, number 149, Hellblade. 148, Faerun Collection. 147, Tunic. 146, Mario Golf Super Rush. 145, Super Mario Party. Then Flint Hook, Skyward Sword, Stardew Valley, Game Builder Garage. Wander Song is at number 140. You can see this is already getting tough, that a game like Skyward Sword is 143. But despite the fact that I love that they gave you real controls, having to use the L button, it just doesn't work really well. And they gave it a try, and I'm glad they put it out. And I played through it, and I beat it, I don't think I even beat it the first time. I thought I did, but it wasn't recognizable. But it ends up pretty low on this list. Tunic is another game, too. I think it's a very good game. It just didn't connect with me. There's something about the world. It feels kind of sleepy. It's a game that I've tried on Xbox. I tried on the Switch. And I just can't get into it. So it sits at 147. But it's, the top three quarters of the list. Hellblade, I think, is a very good game. I did play through it on Switch. It's the only way I've played it. It gets dinged a little bit because it's just the worst place to play it. If you're going to play Hellblade, play it on Xbox or PlayStation. I think the game really benefits from the graphical quality. And the way they did the Switch version is they pre-rendered all the cutscenes. And they did a really good job of just pre-rendering those. And then when they transition to the game, you just see the graphics go and it takes you out of it a little bit. But still very good game. Never been a big Mario Party fan, honestly. All right, 139, Omori. 138, SteamWorld Heist. 137, The Liar Princess and the Blind Prince. 136, Red Dead Redemption. 135, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. And then we have Big Brain Academy, Brain vs. Brain, Mario Strikers Battle League, Fire Emblem Warriors, Live Alive, and then at 130, It'll Do 2 Plus. I can hear Dylan screaming that I put Big Brain Academy ahead of Xenoblade Chronicles 3. SteamWorld Heist just got a sequel announcement. Very excited for that. And this is 138 on my list here. Definitely some underrated games here. I think The Liar Princess and The Blind Prince is a really fun game to play. Also, It'll Do 2 Plus. If you haven't played that, that was very early on the Switch. And it was a port. It was a game that had existed from years before. But it's kind of a Legend of Zelda game. And I think it's one of the very best Legend of Zelda clones on the console. In fact, I should probably play it again someday. There's a bunch of Legend of Zelda clones on Nintendo consoles because they know where the audience is. But that's a really good one. And I have another one that's higher on the list. But It'll Do 2 Plus. If you're looking for a game that's kind of been dead and buried, I mean, it's a really fun game. Live Alive is a game that I did not enjoy very much when I played it. It definitely had its moments. And I remember I started with the Western theme level, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. But then there was other levels that were just weird, and by the end of it, like, things weren't connecting together. But as time has gone by, I look back on it and go, actually, the game was really weird, and I was having trouble figuring out what it was. But as I've been able to digest it, I'm like, yeah, you know what? That game was actually pretty fun. I think it's a game that probably has more value if you play it a second, a third time. The first time can just be so confusing for so long, you don't think you like it as much as you do. Xenoblade 3 is a game I do want to play again. I really do want to play it again. I really do. All right. 129, Elekhead. 128, Golf Story. 127, Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2. 126, Clubhouse Games 51. And then Switch Sports, AVGN 1 and 2 Deluxe, The Witcher 3, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Sharp FE, Runner 3, and then at 120 is Bayonetta 3. Switch Sports, I played a ton of. I played that soccer game so much. I had an absolute blast. I'd play games online. I would sit there oftentimes with my headphones in, listening to a podcast or whatever, and I would just play games of soccer. And I remember that I think it was Thursdays they would reset Switch Sports. So there would be a new card for things to unlock. Feels like a long time ago in my life, but it's fairly recent. And I would just play through and unlock everything on the card and then pretty much not play for the rest of the week until the next Thursday. And I was so glad when they finished it. And they did exactly what I thought it would be. 52 weeks of content. They finished it. And so I was just so happy that I was done because it was becoming a bit of a pain. Playing the soccer just didn't give you enough points, so I had to play for like 2 or 3 hours. Eventually, I was just doing the jousting game because it was way faster. Sometimes I would just like throw the match just to get some quick points. But I had a lot of fun with that one. The Witcher 3, in terms of like my favorite games of all time, is actually much higher on the list, but the Switch version is just much lower. It's definitely a game you should enjoy on other systems, not here. If you're going to play through 60, 70 hours, do it with some better quality. It's a really good port, actually, on the Switch, but it can't hold up to the other versions. And Electhead is a little game that if you haven't played, you should play. It's really enjoyable. It's a really good time. All right. 119, Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes. 118, Gato Roboto. 117, Thimbleweed Park. 116, Snipperclips. And then Hollow Knight, Ring Fit Adventure, Blossom Tales, Yoshi's Crafted World, Yoku's Island Express, and SteamWorld Dig. A lot of interesting games here. Thimbleweed Park was the first game that Limited Run Games put out for the Switch. And I bought the big box, and I played the game, and I love that game. I love it. It is a total callback to adventure games on the PC back in the day. Great humor, amazing looking graphics. It is a gorgeous game. If you like those sort of point and click adventures, Thimbleweed Park is so good. Gato Roboto, also a little indie, amazing Metroidvania. So that's a good game there. Hollow Knight, I've never liked Hollow Knight near as much as a lot of other people. So it sits at 115, right behind Ring Fit Adventure, which is a pretty good showing. And Blossom Tales is another one of those Zelda clones, like It'll Do 2 Plus that I was mentioning that was going to be higher on the list. Both of those games I enjoyed a lot. Blossom Tales just ended up higher. I like the way they tell the story in the form of, like, I think it's like a grandfather telling their granddaughter a story. So it's kind of well done and has some kind of funny moments thanks to it. SteamWorld Dig is higher up than Heist. Heist is very good, but like Dig and its friends are just, I don't know. I don't know what I guess. I think I like the Dig more than the Heist, but I love the Heist. All right, number 109, Ikaruga. Number 108, Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus. Number 107, Balatro. 106, K's and the Wild Masks. And then The End is Nigh, The Cruel King and the Great Hero, Undertale, Dicey Dungeons, Super Mario Maker 2, and then Xenoblade Chronicles. I guess they call it Definitive Edition? The remaster. If you've never played Ikaruga, it's a can't remember. It's a shooter. They call it a hell. I can't remember. It's a really good version of it. I've always heard really good things about this. Then they ported it to Switch and I gave it a try. It's one of the games you can play portably with the Switch system rotated vertically. And that is the best way to play, although it can be uncomfortable. So if you have like a flip grip, I think that only works with the older consoles, or you just put it on a stand or something like that. It is it's a really fun game to hit really freaking hard, but it is very satisfying to go through it over and over and over again, get better and better and better at it. It's really good. Balatro is more recent. I've enjoyed Balatro. Not my favorite roguelike, but right there in the middle of the list, so that's a good showing for Balatro. K's in the Wild Mass is a really good platformer that you'd really enjoy if you like Donkey Kong Country. That's sort of the style of it. And The End is Nigh is a fantastic, I don't want to say what the game is like. It's sort of like a puzzle game, sort of like a Meat Boy. Not a lot of people played it or talked about it, but it's really good. Give that one a shot if you're looking for an indie you might have missed. All right. Top 100 now. 99, Shredder's Revenge. 98, Astral Chain. Number 97, Cobalt Core. 96, Pepper Grinder. 95, South Park, Fractured But Whole. And then Gerda of Flame and Winter, Inscription, Shantae and the Seven Sirens, Luigi's Mansion 3, and a number 90, again on the border, Bayonetta Origins, Cereza and the Lost Demon. I actually put Bayonetta Origins, 20 places higher than Bayonetta 3? Where did I put Bayonetta 3? I just said it, right? Where are you? Bayonetta. Where are you, Bayonetta? Bayonetta 3 was... Am I going crazy? I must be going crazy. I just named Bayonetta, but I can't see it on this list, and I can't search for... Oh, Bayonetta 3 is number 120. Okay, I'm not crazy. So yes, so Raising the Lost Demon, actually 30 spots higher than Bayonetta 3. Not to say Bayonetta Origins is not without its flaws. It's one of those games you use one stick to control Bayonetta and then, or Cereza, and then one stick to control your demon. It can get really kind of nutty in your head. And there were literal times where I really, I didn't feel like I was in full control. My brain was breaking and I was just trying to hang on to the controls. But like exploring the overworld is fun, and the kind of the storybook telling of the story is really nice. So I did enjoy that game. I played it on a road trip. What else here? Inscription, very good game at 93. Pepper Grinder, 96. Maybe a little too high. It was a really fun game, but it's also really short. But I don't want to hold the shortness of it to it. I definitely think Pepper Grinder could have done things a little bit better. I think the way they did the collectathon with the machine where you put in your coins and you get a random item out is just lame. If you're trying to collect, I don't know, like it just the RNG when you're trying to collect things is really kind of super lame. It was a little buggy at launch as well, but otherwise it was a really fun game to play. I had a lot of good time with it. That's how it ended up there, right above Cobalt Core. Another game that might have had some issues with the way it presented itself and then presented its story in such a asynchronous way, I don't think gave it any value, but it was also very fun to play. So the gameplay kind of trumps everything there. Luigi's Mansion 3, I've never enjoyed it as much as other people enjoy it. I don't know. I liked it. It's 91, but it's you know, in the lower part of the 100 here. All right. Number 89, Astro Duel Deluxe. Number 88, Darkest Dungeon. 87, Bayonetta. 86, Rogue Legacy 2. And then Pikmin 4, Bug Fables, Advance Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp, Paper Mario The Origami King, Infernax, and then at number 80, The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles. Infernax is a really good indie short game that has tons of replay value. It's a game that I've played through a couple times. I really enjoy Infernax. It's a game that I like to recommend to people who, you know, don't have anything to play, and I know that they haven't played this game. It went very much under the radar. Advance Wars, I love Advance Wars. Reboot Camp is just 83 because, you know, it's just a remake of an older game. I really enjoyed going through the two of them, though. I went through both sequentially. Pikmin 4, very good. I don't think I love Pikmin enough for it to be super, super high, and it's not my highest Pikmin. Darkest Dungeon, I love, and that's a game I'm actually going to be getting back to fairly soon. And Astro Duel Deluxe, what a great couch op multiplayer fun game. That game just shot up the list. The sequel came out, and I haven't really played it yet. They try to do a campaign mode in it. I feel like I'm not going to get much out of it. I almost don't want to ruin it by getting it. So, all right, 79, Transistor. 78, Bravely Default 2. 77, Splatoon 2. 76, Rayman Legends. 75, Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity. And then Super Mario RPG, Blasphemous, Skyrim, A Short Hike. And then at number 70, A Little to the Left. Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity was hard to put this high on this list. I really did enjoy this story, and it's a bit of a retelling. It's kind of an alternate multiverse thing of Breath of the Wild. I was a little pained by putting it this high only because the performance is so bad. I mean, like, laughably bad. And it's one of those games I really hope they improve with the Switch 2. Now, knowing Nintendo, they probably won't. But I really hope that they kind of give a performance boost if they make a Switch 2, and that's one of the games that really needs it. Rayman Legends is one of the great platformers of all time. I really love it. Splatoon 2 is high up here, basically on the back of Octo Expansion. I think Splatoon 2 did a lot of things, but the Octo Expansion and the Salmon Run, I think, were two great additions, and that's why this game, even though it's not the most recent Splatoon, sits at 77 on this list. 79, Transistor, is a weird, cool, moody game from Supergiant Games that I really love. I've played through several times in a row. Definitely give that a shot. And the Blasphemous games are really good. Very good. Metroidvanias. All right. 69, Captain Toad, Treasure Tracker. 68, SteamWorld Dig 2. 67, West of Loathing. 66, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. 65, ARMS. 64, Diablo 3. 63, Splatoon 3. 62, Pokemon Sword and Shield. Tetris 99, and then at number 60, Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. So Splatoon 3 edges out Splatoon 2, mostly because it has the same features. But it also, too, had a really good DLC. Diablo 3, I fell in love with Diablo by playing this one. This was really my first Diablo, and I had a lot of fun with it. I met Drew through it. We played a lot of multiplayer at nights, and so I had a lot of fun with this one. And it's a game that, like, I kept coming back to for new seasons and doing the same stuff over and over again. And a game I might go back to again, honestly. It's a great, it's a really great port on the Switch. And yeah, now that I think of it, I'm maybe I should play through the campaign again. There's a lot of fun to be had with that one. And Diablo 4 just didn't have the staying power with me, I think mostly because you're playing it on a TV. I think Diablo 3 is just easier to play while you're just watching something on television. ARMS, great staying power. I love ARMS. It's a game I could go back to if people wanted to play with me. I'd be all in. SteamWorld Dig 2, great showing over here as well. That's a fantastic game that looks gorgeous. Absolutely love it. I think this is the first Pokemon sighting on this list as well. I really enjoyed Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl. I like when Pokemon does something different, but then I also like going back and playing the same old Pokemon, and that's what this game did for me. Let me play just a standard Pokemon again. I like it both. I like it. I like all of it. All right, we're getting close here. 59, Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury. 58, Shovel Knight Dig. 57, Mark of the Ninja Remastered. I love it. 56, Octopath Traveler. Then Blasphemous 2, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Pikmin 3 Deluxe. Rain on Your Parade. Octopath Traveler 2. And then at number 50, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Another game that always ends up on a border. So much to say about this list here. Mario 3D World is one of my favorite 3D Marios, but Bowser's Fury just gives it so much extra. If you've never played Bowser's Fury, I definitely recommend playing it docked. There is a huge frame rate difference between docked and handheld. It looks gorgeous docked. So try to play that docked if you can. Mark of the Ninja Remastered is a game I always recommend to people who might not have ever heard of it before. I had a ton of fun playing that game. That is a fantastic game from Clay. What else? Blasphemous 2 is an incredible Metroidvania that somehow beats out the original game by a lot. Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. I had so much fun playing that with my family. I would still be playing that. We're going up to a cabin next week. I wish I could bring it again, but I think they just got tired of it. And you can't play that one solo. I guess you can play it solo. It's just not going to be the same. Yeah, Pikmin 3 Deluxe. Pikmin 3, I guess, is my favorite Pikmin game. I liked 3, I liked 4, I liked 1, I liked 2, I liked all of them. But Pikmin 3 Deluxe, I think, is the best one on Switch to me. I think I just liked Pikmin 4 kind of threw you into like one big world that was maybe a little overwhelming. Pikmin 3 Deluxe kind of keeps the world a little smaller, and I kind of found them to be fairly clever. There's also so much talking to those other dudes in Pikmin 4. Oh my God, so much. That area, there's like that little farm area where there's so many people standing outside, and I can't always tell who I need to talk to. It's just so overwhelming that they have that many NPCs you have to talk to. Pikmin 3 Deluxe just feels like a more compact thing. All right, top 50 now. You ready? Number 49, Overcooked, All You Can Eat. Cuphead at 48. 47, Dragon Quest XI. 46, Link's Awakening. And then Child of Light, Towerfall, Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Rogue Legacy, and then at number 40, Kirby and the Forgotten Land. Woo! All of these games are just so good. There's no really excusing anything anymore. All of these games are great. Love Cuphead. Love Overcooked. Great multiplayer game. Maybe my favorite couch op game of all time. Towerfall is so much fun to play on the couch as well. What can you say? Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair is a game you might not have played. It is fantastic. A lot of collectibles, discoveries, challenges, and I love the way they set it up, kind of like Breath of the Wild, where you can go in and defeat the Impossible Lair right from the beginning if you want to and just roll credits and beat the game. But you're going to find that incredibly hard. It's not called Impossible Lair for nothing. And I played through the entire game and got myself all maxed out, and I still had trouble with the Impossible Lair, but it's a whole bunch of fun to play. Really great game. Kirby and the Forgotten Land, easily my favorite Kirby of all time as well. And if you're looking for a good classic JRPG sort of style, RPG. Child of Light is gorgeous, great music, great story, great characters, and I love the battle system. It's a game that every so often I go back to again and again. I love the way the battle system is set up here with the timings. Child of Light is just special to me. All right, number 39, Super Meat Boy. 38, Let's Go Pikachu. 37, Fire Emblem Engage. 36, Portal. And then we got Bloodstained Curse of the Moon, Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, Super Smash Brothers, The Walking Dead Telltale Series, and then Toem at number 30. Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle is definitely the better of the two. I do respect Sparks of Hope having a more fluid system for movement, but Kingdom Battle is just a lot more fun to figure out how to get past each little level. Bloodstained Curse of the Moon, that becomes my favorite of the Bloodstained series. All three of those games I really do enjoy. All three of them are on my top 200. Curse of the Moon is a retro-style one that I just find a lot of fun, and it's a game I've gone back to and played through over and over. It's really good. Portal makes the list, kind of surprisingly, but like I played it within the last year, and I really freaking love that game. Super Meat Boy, of course, is a game you can go back to over and over again. The levels are just so gruelingly hard, but there's so many little collectibles and secrets to find. It makes you just want to go back and, you know, I've done it a couple times where I go, I'm going to find all the secrets. And then the game gets so hard, I just don't. But it's a really great game to come back to. I love it. And Toem is one of those indie games that is so incredibly good. You can't tell people enough how good Toem is. Fantastic. All right. Number 29, Life is Strange 2. 28, Wargroove. 27, Cadence of Hyrule. 26, Pokemon Legends Arceus. 25, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. And then Persona 5 Royal, Valiant Hearts The Great War, Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon, Axiom Verge, and then at number 20, Fire Emblem Three Houses. We're getting to the cream of the crop here, folks. Life is Strange 2 is the first of many Life is Strange appearances left on this list. Important to know that Wargroove is on this list at 28, and its sequel did not even break the top 200. Very much a sports story situation there. I think they took Wargroove and they tried to expand on it, and they just kind of made it a lot worse. Pokemon Legends Arceus is, I believe, the highest ranked Pokemon game on my list. So if you're looking for a Switch Pokemon game, that's the one. Unless you haven't played Pokemon before, then I think you should play the traditional games. Arceus is a game I am going to replay fairly soon as well. I never got the full true ending because of the way the Pokedex is. I didn't think I had to do everything. And then once I realized I had to do everything, I'm like, well, gee, I wouldn't have moved on from some of these Pokemon if I knew I had to go find them all over again. So I need to do a restart on that. But I loved it so much, I have no problem. Valiant Hearts The Great War, that's the first game. The second game was way down on the list, in the bottom 10. The difference between those two games is huge. Again, another sequel that's not panning out. But Valiant Hearts The Great War is a special, special game that everybody should play. It's educational. It's amazing. It'll bring a tear to your eye. It's so good. And then Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon. Really high. You know, a puzzle game being this high is weird for me, but I love that game. I loved unlocking all the characters. I love trying to beat the game with every character. Every character is so unique. I really love talking. And then they gave a whole bunch of free content, even though it didn't really sell very well. They gave a whole bunch of like free updates, and there's hats and everything. And I still haven't fully explored everything, but I did go back to it. I'll come back to it again. It's also one of the games you have to get good at it again every time. Axiom Verge is, I think, not the top Metroidvania here, but Axiom Verge is something else. If you haven't played Axiom Verge and looking for a game that will remind you of Metroid, dang, this is probably the best Metroid-like Metroidvania for sure. It's fantastic. Fire Emblem Three Houses is the best Fire Emblem on Switch, hands down, easily. I've done many runs in that one, and I have more in my future. All right, let's just take the next, let's take this next four batches, five at a time, because we're in the top 20, and I'm probably going to talk about each of them a little bit. Number 19, Dead Cells and all its DLC. Number 18, Super Mario Odyssey. Number 17, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Number 16, Monster Hunter Rise. Number 15, Hades. Dead Cells, Mario Kart 8, Monster Hunter Rise are games that I played over the span of like years. They're all very good. Dead Cells has incredible DLC. The Return to Castlevania DLC is probably the best just because of the music and the items. But all the other DLC is very good. It's a roguelike, but you have to find your path and you have to take all these different branching paths to find all the bosses and find all the levels. And they have these little in-game achievements when you get to a level and beat a level, beat a boss for the first time. So there's always a different path to take. It can be a little confusing. You kind of have to go online and look up like a chart, maybe print it out, you know, say, oh, I want to go to this level, but how do I get there? You know, it's hard to memorize, but man, it's a game I still play years and years later. Monster Hunter Rise, I put in 300 plus hours in. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I'm not sure how many hours I have in that one, but I've played that since, you know, the Switch came out. And it's the, you know, one of the best online experiences on the Switch. Mario Odyssey is a game that one day I'm going to play it again. I found all the moons. I think it caps out at 999 or whatever. Just an absolutely fantastic game. Not one I've gone back to, but so good on its own. And then, of course, what can you say about Hades? We got Hades 2 maybe coming out later this year, maybe early next year. An incredible roguelike. Might be not the top roguelike on my list, but Hades is incredible. Another game I want to play again before I get into Hades 2. And I want to focus more on some of the storylines in Hades, whereas the first time I played it, I was more focused on just the roguelike part, but I really want to get more into following the stories. All right. Next five, at number 14, Bayonetta 2. Number 13, Untitled Goose Game. Number 12, Life is Strange True Colors. Number 11, Portal 2. And number 10, Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Woo! First of all, Bayonetta 2 at number 14. This used to be my number one of all time. And then a whole bunch of games came out that passed it. But this was my number one game, number one character, everything of all time. It is the number one Bayonetta game of all time, and it's the highest on my list. Untitled Goose Game is a game. There is no person that would not like Untitled Goose Game. There was no person I wouldn't recommend this game to. It's great for kids, older folks, people who don't game very much, like my sister, people who game all the time because it has those great little achievement lists to try to do everything in the game. It's so much fun. And then they did an update sometime later that they made it Untitled Geese Game mode where you can co-op. And my daughter had played through the game. I had played through the game. And then we played through it together. Again, having so much fun. So many videos you capture. It is a triumph. And the first game from that studio. Life is Strange True Colors. This is, the third of the Life is Strange games that's probably on this list now. Well, not really. You'll see how we group it later. This is one of the greatest third-party ports of a game on the Switch, and you may not even know it. This port is so incredibly good, I was in shock. Now, there's a couple of things that they give out when you're indoors. The windows are kind of, you know, like frosted over, so you can't see outside, so that kind of sucks. But the shading, like there's stories about how they did the shading and stuff in this game. It is one of the best ports on the system. Portal 2, again, a game I hadn't played until this year, and I was blown away by how funny Portal 2 is, how challenging and fun it is. It's not overly challenging. The thing about Portal, I think that's enjoyable. Nothing will really keep you trying to figure out what's going on for a very long time. You know, you're kind of, the levels are kind of small, so the options become more limited, and you do not feel overwhelmed by it. It is so funny, and it's such a great continuation of the story from Portal 1. I just love it. And then Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. It's time that game gets respected for what it is. The original Shovel Knight game, and then all the DLC. And every one of those DLCs is a whole other game. It's not just an add-on. It's not an extra level. It's a whole other game. This is four games in one. And then there's like a Smash Brothers Showdown, I think it's called, that is actually probably pretty good, and I've really never explored it, but it's so good. And then all of the games have an achievement list, so if you really wanted to go through and complete everything, you can. It is a game that I've gone back to many times, and I want to go back to again and try to do some more completion stuff. The King of Cards, I think, was my favorite DLC. That was the first one where I did everything. Now, I've never completed all the achievements in any of the games because some of them are brutal, like beat Shovel Knight in an hour, you know, like, I can't do it. But I try to do every achievement I possibly can, every little thing that's really possible, I do it. Find all the items. Oh, so much fun. My gosh. Shovel Knight. If you've never played Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, I'm literally jealous that you have all of this fun in front of you. All right. Let's go through the top 10. We started at top 10, Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Number 9, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. This was a sequel. This game took what Hollow Knight did and integrated it in and totally outdid Hollow Knight. Absolutely. If you like Hollow Knight, you should play Will of the Wisps because it's very similar in some ways. But man, Moon Studios, they are magic. Everything they put out is glorious. And Will of the Wisps is, still not there yet, favorite Metroidvanias. It is an unbelievable. If you haven't played the Ori games, both of them are available on Switch. Both of them are amazing ports. I don't think I played Will of the Wisps on Switch. I played the other one. But the port, I have checked out the port. The port is incredible. They did a really good job with this whole series. Unbelievable. Number 8, Celeste. At one point, Celeste was tied with Bayonetta 2 as my favorite game of all time. Celeste has an amazing art style, fantastic music, and it's one of those really difficult hyper platformers, very much like Super Meat Boy. If you like Super Meat Boy, you'd like Celeste. Super difficult, but they give you a lot of accessibility options, so you can throttle it down a bit if you just physically can't handle it or you just don't want to. And what a story they attach to it, the story of overcoming your demons, climbing the mountains. And I think everybody can relate to Celeste in some way. And then when you figure out the story of its creator, who is transitioned shortly after, and that this was a personal story to them about climbing this mountain of fear, it just puts it in perspective. Just an amazing game. And like one of the only like 2D retro looking games that will make you cry. Fantastic. Number 7, Ori and the Blind Forest, the original Ori game. I kept trying to like hint at it and then take it away. Ori and the Blind Forest is a great little Metroidvania game that becomes a incredibly difficult platformer by the end. It just almost like transforms itself. I haven't played this game in a long time, and it's a game I do want to play again. I never 100%ed this game, so that's something that I want to try to do. So many secrets to find, so much great platforming, great story. Another game that made me cry for sure. Beautiful. Play both Ori games. They are so good. It's nuts. Number 6, Breath of the Wild. This was the original, the launch title for the Switch. I think we all know what it is. I don't have to describe this game. If you haven't played it, I don't know why you're listening to a Nintendo-themed podcast. You're just being silly. Breath of the Wild took open world games to a whole new level. Now, graphically, no. There's bigger, better open world games with graphical styles that are, you know, whatever, fine. But what it did was it made you feel so isolated and gave you so much freedom. You literally could do whatever you wanted. There was never an invisible wall to stop you. You want to go kill Ganon right off the bat? Go for it, right? It was incredible. There's not one invisible wall in this game. You could just do whatever you wanted to. And then the shrines were really fun to do. They used some like physics. And it's a game I have played through twice now. And it's they're going to get another playthrough in the future. Just absolutely fantastic. A must play. Number 5, Slay the Spire, a deck building roguelike. This is the cream of the crop, and it's not even close. What makes Slay the Spire so fun is that every given run, you're going to get just a wealth of different cards. Every run feels so unique. You get relics that give you like these improvements, and you can try to synergize relics to cards and cards to cards. There's so many ways to play it. There are now 4 characters you can play as. And each character plays different and has different skills. And then there's 20 ascension levels for each one. I have been trying to climb up the ascension ladder forever. This was a game that I feel like maybe 2 or 3 years ago I recommended to Drew after we played Dicey Dungeon, because I kept comparing the two. And I said, you should try Slay the Spire. And I think he played something like 500 hours of this game. And he has gotten through Ascension level 20. And I'm still struggling just to get to 5 with the characters. My goal is to just get to Ascension level 5 with all the characters. And I can't even do it. And I've been playing this game for years. I constantly come back to this one. The best deck builder by far. It's another reason why I didn't like Marvel's Midnight Suns as much as I really could have, because I just didn't feel like it didn't have the deck building qualities of Slay the Spire. Number 4, Sayonara Wild Hearts by Samogo. Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, which we just saw in the indie world, is the next game from Samogo. They haven't made one since Sayonara Wild Hearts. And Sayonara Wild Hearts so blew me away. I bought it on Switch because I'd heard good things about it on mobile. And I was like, oh, it looks really pretty and I like rhythm games. Let me get it. I did not expect it to do what it did. It tells a really good story. The lead character kind of becomes like a dancer, and just amazing choreography through the game. Incredible music. It's one of the only soundtracks in gaming that I will listen to regularly on Apple Music. It is fantastic, and it is a game that I have played through so many times I can't even count. It's also a game I always recommend to people. To beat this game, to roll credits will take you no more than 90 minutes. It really is impossible not to beat it. Because if you keep dying in the same section like a few times, it'll ask you if you just want to skip it. It's impossible, but the challenge is to try to like maximize your score. You have like silver rank, bronze rank, silver rank, gold rank. But then there's like wild rank. So you have to be almost perfect on every stage to get a wild rank. And I had gotten gold ranks on everything before I even knew wild rank existed. I was just like Googling something and they talked about wild rank. And I was like, what? And it's like, yeah, it requires near perfection. And there's a wild ranking. So I then wild ranked every level, but I cannot wild rank the final two like YOLO levels. Too hard for me. You really have to keep on it and keep playing levels over and over and over again to be able to do it. Because, you know, trying to do 60 minutes consecutively is hard to do when you have to be almost nearly perfect to do it. But it's a game I love. And every so often I'll sit down and play through it. I'll either put my soundbar up way up or put some headphones on. It is fantastic. Number 4, Sayonara Wild Hearts. Number 3, Into the Breach. This is far and away the best roguelike game on the list. Slay the Spire is close. But this combines my two favorite genres, which is roguelike and then strategy turn-based games. And when you've played a ton of Fire Emblem and other strategy-type games like Advance Wars, Into the Breach just blows your mind because it's not just about defeating all the enemies. Oftentimes, you don't want to defeat them. You just want to push them out of the way or shove them into the water. Just the goal is in each level to protect the buildings, not yourself. Sometimes sacrificing yourself and your character is the way to save a building and save your run. It is a magical game and tons of unlockables in this game. There's so many teams to unlock. And I did all of it. I had 100% of the game. And then they expanded it just out of the blue. The team, I think it's two people that make it, expanded it. And there's like 10 new teams and bunches of other stuff that you can do. And I've been playing through that. And I'm still trying to unlock the last squad. I just can't get enough gold coins to unlock the last squad. But it's a game I keep coming back to. And for people who have never played this game that love strategy games, turn-based games, this is the one. This is the best. There is nothing better than Into the Breach. Number 2 on Nintendo Switch of all time, Life is Strange Arcadia Bay Collection. This was a remaster of the original Life is Strange and then its prequel, Life is Strange Before the Storm. If you've listened to any of the show, you know what Life is Strange means to me. It's an incredible achievement in narrative and storytelling. This was a remaster. This one had some problems when it came out. It took them at least a year to get through the bugs in this. And I think there still are a couple. I don't know what Deck Nine went through to put this out on Switch to remaster the original game from 2015. And then just all of the bugs that came from it. I think they had bigger aspirations of what they wanted it to be. A lot of it was advertised as they were doing motion capture for the performances, but I don't know. When I see some of the performances, I don't always feel the motion capture. I just think they got limited once they went into the code base of what they could do. But it's an incredible game. You get both of them in one on Switch. And if you love narratives, storytelling, whatever, and you haven't played Life is Strange and its prequel, oh boy. Oh boy. You are in for something. And then the number one game that you can buy on the Nintendo Switch, far and away, Tears of the Kingdom, the sequel to Breath of the Wild. When we were in the lead up to this game, Nintendo was really kind of keeping information close to them on it. And it was confusing. It was like, I knew it was a game I was going to play. It didn't matter. But I was like, I'd really like to know maybe a little bit more. And it wasn't until a few weeks before that we finally got like a couple of the trailers that we remember today that showed the physics and the construction aspects of this game. But up until then, it was like, oh, it's going to take place in Hyrule, the same Hyrule from the first game. And it was like, oh my God, is this going to feel like a lot of the same? But they took that world. They changed so much. There's so many new characters. If you know Breath of the Wild really well, and I have a terrible gaming memory, so I don't, but you will see things that are recognizable but different. And it just, every one of those things tells a story. Buildings built on other things and buildings that are gone, and just the change in the environment, where Breath of the Wild was very desolate and destroyed. Breath of the Wild is about hope and rebuilding. And then on top of that, there's an underworld. There's an overworld in the sky. The shrines are even more fun to do. Every time I went into a shrine, I was so excited. What do I need to build with Ultra Hand? How am I going to get through this one? Absolutely incredible. Everything was so fun. The shrines were never boring. In fact, the shrines that were just sort of like auto wins because you had to figure out a challenge to even get to the shrine were almost like a disappointment to me. Whereas in Breath of the Wild, I loved them because they were easy. You can figure out how you want to upgrade. Do you want to go for health? Do you want to go for stamina? How do you want to play this game? Breath of the Wild was about isolation and this sort of origin of this little series. Tears of the Kingdom had a really big challenge in that it was something that we had done before. But I'm telling you, that first area, there's like these intro tutorial areas in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And it is so good in Tears of the Kingdom. I was just telling Michelle yesterday, I was like, I really want to play Tears of the Kingdom again because I really want to go through that first area again. Absolutely magical. Love the art style and the green that they're bringing in for this one. It is a game I could jump back into. I still have probably tons of side quests to find and do. I never found the bubble guys, the guys that like will eventually sell you the masks. I have all of these bubble gems that I've collected. I have never found the bubble guys, ever. So I'm kind of split between wanting to just continue my game at some point or just starting all over from scratch and playing through this brilliant, brilliant freaking game all over again. And I think, hands down, the best ending of a Nintendo game in history. And maybe if I thought about it, I can think of something else. But I love the whole ending sequence to this game. It's great. Super Metroid has a great ending, too. But Tears of the Kingdom, just kind of in a different time and space. Absolutely fantastic. So that's my top 200 of all time. That was a lot to get through. That was tough to put together. Don't take the positions super literally. If anything, take this as these are a bunch of games that John recommends. Anything in the top 100 is a game that if you have never played, you should play today. Everything in the bottom 100 are games that I think are good, but you know, maybe or maybe not recommended to you. But yeah, don't get too caught up. This is just me. It's just my opinion on stuff. But all of these games are just so fantastic to me, and they're all kind of, when I look back on the Switch years from now, these are the games that I'm going to remember for sure. But thanks for everyone kind of joining in. I know that was a long list. That might have been a little boring. I don't know if... but I wanted to capture it in an episode. Whatever. If you don't want to listen to it, fine. But if you got here, if you listened to all 200 of my games, thank you so much. But that's it. We'll be back next week for regular episode. But until then, good night, guys.
The Dads After Dark Show is part of the Nintendo Dads family of podcasts. You can subscribe to us anywhere podcasts are available. And if you're using Apple or Spotify, please do consider leaving us a 5-star review. Pretty please? Find us on Threads, Instagram and TikTok at ndadsafterdark, or you can leave us a voicemail. Check the episode notes for details. Join us on the Nintendo Dads Discord in the Dads After Dark show channels. That's where we chat and participate in monthly mayhem contests, game tournaments and other fun activities. Get access by joining the Nintendo Dads Patreon or by subscribing to their Twitch channel. Check out our Substack at dadsafterdarkshow.substack.com for articles, links to social media and our merch store. Fancy a t-shirt, perhaps? A big thank you to Family Jewels for our show's theme music. Check out his YouTube channel to hear other awesome Nintendo cover tunes. That's all for now. Good night, dads. Sweet dreams.